This is a HeadGum Podcast.
While Andrew and Craig believe the joy of discovery is crucial to enjoying any well-told tale, they will not shy away from spoiling specific story beats when necessary. Plus, these are books you should have read by now.
Welcome to Overdue. It's a podcast about the books you've been meaning to read. My name is Craig.
My name is Andrew.
And it's Children's Book Week.
Again?
They do it twice a year,
I think. Oh, this twice a year now? What is it, Prime Day? Like, what is this, Jeff Bezos run Children's Book Week now?
I think at one point I realized that they do it twice a year, but it's either in like Spooktober or sometimes we theme November, so I just ignore that one.
I think we just celebrate the spring one.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Like the Queen has two birthdays, or
children's got lots going on in the fall.
They don't need a week. No, they
in
do not.
October, November, they got lots happening.
That's true. So we are celebrating this year by reading a book that I don't think I have read in its entirety prior to the assignment for this podcast. Andrew, you?
No.
No. Any no. of it?
No, not none of it. I have, and I've not seen the movies. Like, I knew of Paddington, but I don't remember if this was on mic or off. I always confuse him with Corduroy, who is that bear in like the illustrated children's books who tries to steal a button from a mattress in a department store.
They have a similar look.
Yeah.
With and
they're
their
both
jacket.
They're both criminals also.
Listen. Listen,
like to the point where I thought Paddington also was an illustrated book, and I was surprised that it was a novel thing.
Oh, yeah. I think I had ever read the first story in this collection, A Bear Called Paddington by Michael Bond. Yes. He has other catchphrases, right?
James Bond?
Yeah.
Yeah, Martine shaken, not stirred.
I can't make that about a
and
children's book.
Give me a gun, you.
No, I won't do it your way, M.
Give me a gun, your majesty.
Yeah.
This is all stuff that James Bond says.
Listen, Paddington, also a friend of the queen. Friend of the queen, Paddington Bear. So we're going to celebrate children's book. We're going to talk about Bear Called Paddington, the first book in the long Paddington series.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot we'll of talk about the queen. Maybe we'll talk about the queen a little bit.
But yeah, I remember having an affection for him. I don't know if I was read Paddington stories as a child. I feel like maybe it happened, but
he has kind of like a cute, soft name, you know, like Padding is right there in it.
Yeah, it's a place.
It seems comforting. You know. Yeah, it's a train station.
Yeah. But I'm excited to talk about this book. I had a fun little read with it.
Yeah.
What do we know or do we need to know about Bond, double
Bond, Paddington. Michael Bond.
Yeah.
Well, he was born in 1926, died in 2017. Dude was kicking for a long time. He should run for American president, am I right?
Wow.
He's an English author whose works included the Paddington Bear series, the Olga Dipolga series, which is about a guinea pig.
Great name.
And the Monsieur Pamplemousse series.
Yes.
Can you give me that in the French translation?
Yes. He wrote Culinary Mysteries featuring Monsieur Pamplemousse and his chien, or that means dog.
His dog, yeah.
Pomme frite, which means French fries.
Yes, which is like a weird, like, food-related detective mystery series for adults.
I love it.
Which is cool, yeah. And then a fairly long list of other books, a bunch of them about Thursday. Like the day of the week, then a few like TV things. He worked for the BBC for a long time. He was a cameraman, in like the 50s into the 60s, I think. But yeah, he sold his first short story. Well, okay, he was raised in Reading. Go back a little bit further.
Yeah, skip a
paragraph. Dropped out of school at 14. Worked in a solicitor's office. That's British for lawyer. And as an engineer's assistant during the war.
Yes.
And he attempted to serve in the Royal Air Force later in the war when he's a little bit older, but he suffered from air sickness, so he couldn't. He sold his first short story in 1945, but yeah, he was mainly a BBC TV cameraman. His first novel that comes out is A Bear Called Paddington.
Correct.
In 1958.
Yeah.
And then it was not until 1965 that he was able to quit that job and write full time.
Yeah, sure.
Paddington book. Okay. 1958, 1959, 1960, 61, 62, 64, 66, 68, 70. Very busy first couple of decades for Paddington. He's got like one every year or two for a long time. Starts to slow down a little bit in the 80s. There's only one in the 90s called A Day by the Sea. But he was publishing Paddington books all the way up until 2017 when he died. Paddington's Finest Hour was the last one that came out in 2017 while he was alive. And then there are a couple of posthumous things.
That is wild to me, and I think plays into perhaps just the whole vibe around those Paul King Paddington movies that people love. I have not seen either of them.
I've not seen either of them. People, like, Paddington 2 was, for a time, the highest rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes. Like,
yes.
Like, ever. Paddington 2.
Like, supplanted Toy Story 2 in the,
and, like Citizen Kane.
Yeah, yeah.
Paddington 2.
And those two movies being almost universally beloved explains to me why people liked Wonka, because it's the same guy.
Whoa. Oh, okay.
But I do think that people are worried about the next Paddington movie because it's not that guy.
And it's called Paddington in Peru, and this is due out at the end of 2024. I don't think any good ever comes of uprooting your character much.
You take your fish out of water and put them back in the water, and usually that doesn't go great.
Yeah. And then also, I think, like, I read some stuff. This dovetails with all the stuff about the Queen that we could maybe talk about.
Yeah,
or maybe,
man.
Not. I think Paddington 2 was, like, a blandly pro-immigration sort of, like, had a blandly pro-immigration message.
Broadly,
at a time
let's
when,
say,
like,
rather than blandly. I haven't seen the film.
Okay, sure. At a time when Brexit had just kind of happened.
Yes,
people are still kind of reeling from it.
Mm-hmm. One of the Queen's last recorded appearances was a 2022 spot with Paddington.
It was a skit as part of her Jubilee celebration.
Yeah, they both love marmalade sandwiches. She pulls one out of her bag completely unwrapped after Paddington pulls one out of his like hat or something.
I believe that the Queen carried around loose sandwiches.
She did a lot of things.
Yeah.
Where did Paddington come from? There's a couple things happening there.
So in the postscript in the edition of the book that I read,
probably have the same thing.
The source of my inspiration was a toy bear sitting on the mantelpiece of our one room flat near London's Portobello Market. Sounds delicious. I had bought it in desperation the previous Christmas Eve as a stocking filler for my wife, and we called him Paddington because I'd always liked the sound of it. And names are important, particularly if you are a bear and don't have very much else in the world. In no time at all, he became part of the family. In fact, for a long time, he was the family and was treated as such, joining us at mealtimes, sharing our holidays, occasionally interrupting our conversations.
Sure.
He says of the book, the opening paragraph was simply an early morning doodle brought on by the certain knowledge that if I didn't put something down on a blank sheet of paper in my typewriter, nobody else would.
Mm.
However, it caught my fancy, so I wrote a second paragraph, then a third, until by the end of the day, I had completed a whole story. 10 working days later, having completed 7 more stories, I realized I had a book on my hands. It hadn't been written with any particular age group in mind, which was fortunate, because until then, I had always written for adults, and if I had consciously aimed at a young audience, I might have written down, which is a bad idea. And that gets to, like, I think the vibe of Paddington, the closest thing to it, is the Winnie the Pooh books.
Yes.
Milne was, like, two and out on those. And Bond was like, no, I'm going to write these literally until I die.
But at least in this collection, I have a pretty, like, distinct idea of why they're separate, which we'll talk about later. Like, why we can have both bears and not feel like they are redundant to each other. But I think you're right. The adult-ish sensibility gives it a very distinct vibe and energy.
Like every once in a while they're just like concerned with an adult thing.
Yes.
In a way, like when Paddington is all icky sticky and he's covered in cream and jam and he wants to get in the cab and the cabbie looks at him and he's just like, bears is extra.
Bears, sticky bears is extra. He said, I don't think I ever realized it, but my parents served as role models for Mr. and Mrs. Brown. That's the family that adopts Paddington. There was also a lot of my father in Paddington, for he was very law-abiding and never went out without a hat in case he bumped into someone he knew and had nothing to raise. Jonathan and Judy were there to bridge the age gap. Those are the brother and sister. Mrs. Bird, the housekeeper, was based on memories of my childhood best friend's live-in nanny. And Paddington's best friend, Mr. Gruber, is important because he knows what it is like to be a refugee in a strange country, so they have a special relationship. Why is that relevant to Paddington here, Andrew?
Because he's from Darkest Peru, which is a phrase that is used a lot.
Yeah.
And I have some misgivings about.
Apparently, it was supposed to be Darkest Africa.
Yeah.
And I think there was I don't remember the reason why he was coached away from that choice.
I was talking with Susanna about this before we started recording, and she said that it was because somebody told him that there aren't bears in Africa.
Oh, I think true. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, he got to the right decision in the end in not making him be from Darkest Africa. You know, we could wish it was for
like better reasons.
Because I feel like it's just like the vibe of saying he's from Darkest Peru is just like, what's the most exotic sounding place that I can think of?
Yeah.
To mm-hmm. make him sound like he's from without Correct. Really thinking about it at all. Because he is essentially just a little British man in a bared body.
It's true. Because in the first story, they're like, what's your name? And he's like, a Peruvian word you won't understand. And it is never spoken of again. And I think there
is every like movie or video game where an alien comes to Earth and is like, well, your human tongue couldn't pronounce it, but you may call me Paddington. Yeah.
I think there is a read on Paddington, a non-charitable read or a critical read on Paddington that is like, they're forcing him to assimilate. He seems eager to assimilate.
Oh, he's happy to assimilate. Like, he's pretty much there already.
Yeah.
He's like, you got marmalade? Awesome.
I read a piece by Rebecca Mead in The New Yorker called Paddington Bear Refugee that was published in June 2017.
It does sound like it would be the name of one of the later Paddington books.
I think it was published around the time of Bond's passing. Mm-hmm. Talks about the other bears that had been around in fiction. We've got Winnie the Pooh. We've got Rupert Bear. Got someone named Teddy Robinson.
About Teddy Ruxpin.
I think this is too early. We're not at Teddy Ruxpin yet.
Okay.
But apparently in Britain, the bears had been basically, quote, hunted into oblivion ages ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the whatever bear you encounter is going to be pretty novel, and for the most part, like, you can just kind of project what you want onto bears in mm-hmm. British literature.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mead goes on to talk about the origin of Paddington from the immigrant perspective, right? Like, Bond apparently told multiple versions of this inspiration where he saw groups of children on train platforms in London during the war with like very little belongings, a few belongings, and instructions to care for them. And in some versions of the story, they were British evacuees being sent out of London. In other versions, they were Jewish refugees during like the Kinder transport. And he just said like that stuck with him as we need to take care of these, you know, young people who are, you know, uprooted and being sent around the world.
Yeah. And he also says in this introduction, Paddington has a friend named Mr. Gruber who runs like a, not like a pawn shop, it's just kind of a weird like antique store. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Paddington's best friend, Mr. Gruber, is important because he knows what it is like to be a refugee in a strange country. So they have a special relationship. So even though that is never really explicitly mentioned in the text, and this postscript is dated like 2001, so yep, like many, yep. many years after the fact. But there is some element of dealing with Paddington as like not from around here.
Yes.
That's baked into this first one. He just doesn't spend a lot of time belaboring it.
No, and I wonder, I'm not going to read every Paddington book, at least not anytime
soon. Wait, you're not going to read more about Paddington? Paddington helps out. Paddington abroad. Paddington at large. Paddington marches. Paddington at work. Paddington goes to town. Paddington takes the air. Paddington's garden. Paddington's Blue Peter storybook. Paddington on top. Paddington at the tower. Paddington takes the test. Paddington on screen. Paddington at the zoo. Paddington at the palace. Paddington's busy day. A day by the sea. Paddington in the garden. Paddington in the grand tour. Paddington rules the waves. Paddington here and now. Paddington races ahead. Paddington goes for gold. Love from Paddington. Paddington's finest hour. Paddington at St. Paul's, or Paddington turns detective and other funny stories. You're not going to read any of those?
I might read that last one. Sounds really good, actually. But so I don't know how their relationship evolves. But yeah, it is implied that, you know, Gruber, as a Hungarian living in Britain, and Mead writes about, like, the increase in immigrant communities in Britain following the World War, following the end of various British colonial enterprises, he's an interesting figure, Gruber, and I don't know. I wonder if, you know, how else that is explored in later books.
Yeah, because these first books often, like, in you account, there's a little bit in the Redwald series. Like, I'm thinking of that because... Mm. It was a popular, like, series fiction where the early books have some kind of odd little, they have some odd texture that's left in them because the universe hadn't been fully, like, thought out or fleshed out.
Yeah, sure.
And a lot of that stuff has kind of disappeared in later books. So I wonder who of these characters, like, I'm sure the family, like, the core family is still sticking around. But,
yeah,
like, who else does Paddington pick up over the course of, like, 20 books, and who does he shed?
Just gets catamaried and rolled up into the Paddington machine. Yeah. Just a quick note on other media appearances of Paddington. Again, he was reportedly based on a teddy bear that the author noticed on a shelf in a London shop.
Though he is not a teddy bear.
No.
In the book, he's a real bear.
He's a real bear who talks human English.
Mm-hmm. He's from darkest Peru. And he has a grandmother in, like, a nursing home in Lima.
Aunt Lucy.
Aunt Lucy, yes.
Who he has a photograph of.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The first adaptation, there's no surviving footage of this, was a short animated thing about Paddington on the show Jackanory. I don't know what they're doing in...
They didn't save the master tapes for Jackanory.
Similarly, there are no surviving footage of Paddington stories on something called Once Upon a Time. There's a stop motion Paddington series in 1976 that Bond wrote. It was aired. I think it must have gotten a similar thing as Thomas, where it was, like, aired as part of other shows in the U.S. Like, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of cut up and put into other programming.
Yes, yeah. Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yes,
just for reference. Because it could be talking about any Thomas.
Yeah. When he's in your house, when there are versions of Thomas the Tank Engine in your house, he's just Thomas.
He is just Thomas, yeah.
1989, there's a TV series by Hanna-Barbera. 1997, there's a Canadian series. And there's the 2014 film with Ben Whishaw voicing Paddington. The 2017 film. And then there's a 2019, I think it might be a CGI Paddington that is also voiced by Ben Whishaw.
Well, I mean, Paddington in the Paddington movies is still CGI. He's not
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. I think I meant that, like, the
it's a fully animated yes. movie instead of an animated bear, real people.
No, I don't. Yes. I do not believe that it was a real bear in the
Paddington and
films.
Paddington 2 are Who Framed Roger Rabbit's, and then. The other ones animated. Okay, cool.
And in December 2023, they announced a musical about Paddington, mm-hmm. which I presume is a cash-in based on the success of the films, and who knows what else will happen from there. But
yeah,
hopefully somebody makes a good one. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, Paddington.
If you want to go watch Paddington interact with the Queen, just search for Queen Elizabeth II, Paddington, Love of Marmalade Sandwiches.
Seems like there were a lot of people who were not okay about this in various ways, like after she died.
avoid the YouTube videos where Paddington stands outside a rainy Buckingham Palace, like basically crying about the Queen's death. I've seen them. They're not worth it for the reasons you think they're worth it. All right, Andrew, let's take a quick break and then we can talk about this bear called Paddington.
All right. Craig, I've got a real bear of a problem for you.
Okay.
I have ideas and merchandise that I need to get out into the world, but I don't know how to do it.
We build things on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the internet, like a website. You know what? This week's episode of Overdue is brought to you by Squarespace. I bet they can help.
I bet they can help.
Squarespace is a website that helps you make websites. They give you beautiful, easy-to-use templates and drag-and-drop tools and 24/7 customer support and analytics and all kinds of other stuff. All the building blocks that you need to make a website that works for you and your and or your business, depending on what you're making a website for.
Yes, okay.
Here's some things that we like about Squarespace. Yep. First, you got Squarespace Blueprint. You can start a completely personalized website with a new guided design system. It's called Squarespace Blueprint, Craig. Okay. A guided design system from Squarespace. Choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want.
This all sounds good. I don't want to grow a way I don't want.
I don't want to grow a way I don't want.
And I do want to show up to more people. So this is sounding good to me so far. Well,
if you want to know whether the people that you're trying to reach are showing up, good news, they got analytics. You can measure your end-to-end online performance with powerful website and seller analytics. Get insights on top traffic sources, understand how your reach is growing, track sales metrics, and learn where to focus new engagement. It's all the data you need to scale your brand or business, fully integrated and clearly displayed. Also, an online store. Sell your products and services with an online store. Whether you sell physical goods, digital content, or services, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. ABC, always be equal. Closing your online sales on your online store at Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/overdue to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/overdue. Save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Andrew, this book is made up of 8 stories.
Yeah, Paddington.
That the first few, I think the first 4 are basically like a couple of days in the life of this family who encounters a bear.
Yeah, Paddington just like getting used to being around.
Yeah. And then the back half of the book, there's a bit of a time jump where it's just like, he's part of the family now.
Well, and he does all the shopping and he gets really good prices at the market.
Okay, maybe it's the first 3 stories because, yeah, the one where he goes and he's just like a good haggler.
That one I think is, so oh, that chapter is Paddington, 4, the old shopping master. Expedition is the one where he
gets clothes.
Goes into the shop window and he like, he ruins the display, okay. But it's like a Curious George thing where actually it's good that he did that because yes. He drew crowds to the market.
Let me read. Please, these are the chapters. Please look after this bear. A bear in hot water. Paddington goes underground. A shopping expedition. Paddington and the old master. A visit to the theater. Adventure at the seaside. A disappearing trick. And you've already mentioned one thing that's in basically every Paddington story, mm-hmm. which is hijinks. There's
a lot of hijinks,
like slapstick hijinks,
and it's not the root of the hijinks is usually Paddington just like bumbling his way through
yes
a situation and not fully understanding it, and then everybody just kind of crowds around him at the end and is like, oh Paddington.
He's never really...
It's not an Amelia Bedelia thing where he takes everything super literally. It's like there are a lot of different like subgenres of bumbling, lovable protagonists.
Yes. He does have a little bit of Amelia Bedelia in the one story, which is just like, you know, come on. I'm sure this humor felt very fresh in 1958, but like the Mr. Gruber is like, oh yes, something is worth like so-and-so pounds. And then he's
worth
like,
his weight in gold, yeah.
I weigh this many pounds. Oh, wait a sec. Like, and it's a joke about the pound sterling. But that's, and there's like one or two other Amelia Bedelia-esque, like being a little literal because he's not British. But you're right. It's largely him just trying to live And then, and, like being he falls over into stuff.
Yeah, and he's just kind of clumsy and silly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in the book four, or chapter four, sorry, not book four.
Yeah, yeah.
In chapter four, where he's out shopping with the family, he's wearing like a coat with a big hood because big hoods are in season this year.
Oh, and he's got that pom-pom with the beret with the pom-pom on it that like falls.
Yeah,
on his
and
head.
he's got like a suitcase and everything, and he like bends over to try and get something out of his bag, and the hood slips over his eyes, and he thinks the lights are out, so he just starts stumbling around into stuff.
And he thinks he's going to go outside, but then it's still dark outside.
But it's still dark, yeah, because he doesn't realize that his hood is over his head.
And then he just becomes a viral sensation where he knocks a bunch of stuff over in a shop window, and then the guy who runs the shop is like, this is great. Everyone's on the street clapping.
This is the big difference between Paddington and Winnie the Pooh. Is Winnie the Pooh is he lives in the woods and he's imaginary. So the amount of real world damage that he can do when he misunderstands something is pretty limited.
That's the
and
difference.
Paddington, like, not the like the early Curious Georges, but like the TV show Curious George, where especially the first season where Curious George just causes lots of property damage all the time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Paddington can mess things up in a way that really like inconveniences a lot of people.
Yes.
Like at best, it inconveniences them. At worst, they are out like however much money it costs to...
I can't remember if it's in the birthday chapter or if it's in the adventure to the seaside chapter where Mrs. Brown is talking to the housekeeper, Mrs. Bird, and they're like, yeah, he's been like he hasn't gotten into any trouble lately. And the other one goes, yeah, that's why I'm worried. Like yeah, they're due for him to just stumble into trouble. And the
I think in the birthday one, they start like Paddington wants to help them do something. And they're like, yeah, Paddington, here's another thing you could go do. Yeah. Don't worry about it, Paddington.
It's true. The other thing for me that like differentiates it from something like Pooh is, and we should talk about like the other characters here. My recollection, at least of that first Winnie the Pooh book, is it is like introducing you to new characters in the Hundred Acre Wood, and like they each get like a little chapter that kind of introduces them to, you know, you to their deal,
mm-hmm.
and it's part of the pretend play that's happening. And this book is like, yeah, there's a family that takes care of Paddington, but like he's just gonna go do a bunch of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and hijinks are gonna happen. Like it's. Yeah. And that's not a value judgment on either, but I was kind of struck by the fact that like there wasn't a chapter where he and, you know, the daughter Judy get into particular trouble. There's not a chapter where he hangs out with the boy Jonathan and does something.
No, he's not hanging out with the family members. The family members are just kind of along for the Paddington ride mostly. Like they're just there to observe and occasionally clean up the messes that Paddington makes when he like breaks the entire subway.
Yeah.
And only gets out of it through some like air bud. Like, well, the laws say that people can't mess up the subway, but I'm not a person. I'm a bear.
Yeah. Mrs. Brown comes up with that one. She explicitly declares Paddington not a person to get him out of legal hot water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Browns. Let's talk about him, Andrew.
Let's talk about the Browns.
Mr. and Mrs. Brown first met Paddington on a railway platform. In fact, that was how he came to have such an unusual name for a bear. For Paddington was the name of the station. Mm-hmm. The opening of the first story. They are
because it's his Peruvian name, of course, too complicated to pronounce.
But his aunt is named Lucy. So, yeah,
but and it's like Paddington makes that determination himself. Like it's not that he tries to say it and the British people are like, we're just gonna call you Paddington. It's
he decides. He's like, no, you won't get it. Let's pretend I don't have a name
for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are upper middle class at least. They have a housekeeper.
They have a maid, yeah.
And they have a live-in housekeeper and they are awaiting their daughter Judy coming home from boarding school, which is why they're at the train station.
Mm-hmm.
And they just see this little bear sitting on a suitcase wearing a hat and a sign that says, please look after this bear.
Yeah.
And they wander over and they're like, is that a real bear? And they wander over and he says, like, hello to them.
Hello, I am a bear.
In perfect human English.
Mm-hmm.
And at most, people in this book are given 2 seconds to go, wow, a bear is speaking English. But they never say it out loud. They just go like, huh.
Yeah, you don't see that every day.
And then they move on.
Right. And, like, sometimes they're, like, their mystification with it is allowed to, like, persist for long enough that, like, the cabbie never, like, comes around to Paddington's shtick. There's a guy in one of the department stores who never is on board with Paddington as
correct.
A thing. But it is usually presented as just, like, they don't like Paddington because of who he is. It's not just that he's a weird bear.
It's because he's, like, causing trouble.
It's because he's causing trouble, making a mess.
And he is both an old man and a toddler. Like, that's the other thing about Paddington that I kind of like. I like that, especially the first half of this book, is if you're reading this book to a kid, Paddington is just getting into trouble doing things that kids have to do.
Yeah.
Like, eat in public.
Taking
or
a bath.
Mm-hmm. Take
Get
a
on
bath.
The train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go on train. Have your parents shop for clothes for you.
Yeah.
And he gets into trouble every time at the train station. You know, they welcome him because, you know, they promise him marmalade every day, which like is oof, oh boy, he loves marmalade.
That's a lot of sugar to give.
That's
to
why
a bear.
He loves it so much, because he can only have it a little bit. He had one jar of it in his suitcase and it ran out. But they call him Paddington because of the station. They're going to take him home, and Mrs. Brown is going to go find Judy, and Mr. Brown is going to eat with him. And the first hijinks, I'm going to read this full clip so people get the understanding of the, like, style of hijinks that are happening here. Mr. Brown has pretended that, you know, he's just in public eating with a bear. And he's like, this is fine. He's just pretending like this is normal. Mm-hmm. The daughter Judy shows up to greet them. Paddington has climbed onto the table to eat his food, already making a bit of a sticky mess.
Mm-hmm.
And Paddington, who all this time had been too interested in his bun to worry about what was going on, suddenly became aware that people were talking about him. He looked up to see that Mrs. Brown had been joined by a little girl with laughing blue eyes and long fair hair. He jumped up, meaning to raise his hat, and in his haste slipped on a patch of strawberry jam, which somehow or other had found its way onto the glass tabletop. For a brief moment, he had a dizzy impression of everything and everyone being upside down. He waved his paws wildly in the air, and then before anyone could catch him, he somersaulted backwards and landed with a splash in his saucer of tea. He jumped up even quicker than he had sat down because the tea was still very hot, and promptly stepped into Mr. Brown's cup. Oh, yeah. Paddington.
Yeah.
There's like every chapter has like 1.5 paragraphs where your only response can be, oh, Paddington.
Oh, Paddington. And it's always just like this cascading thing where he does one thing and then it leads to like 6 other much more ruinous things.
Yeah. It's charming, you know.
Yeah, mostly.
I
have to clean up after him, so it's charming.
Yeah, exactly. And
it is the second chapter is one where Paddington almost drowns in the bathtub.
It's very harrowing.
And he gets water all over the floor, and water like leaks through the ceiling. In the movie, again, this is another Susanna fact.
It's like a big deal. It's like a big set piece, I think.
Well,
right?
It's like, yeah, like the water does that thing in cartoons where there's so much of it that you open the door and a big wall of water comes out at you. And everybody in the book and the movie is like, oh, Paddington, where in real life you'd want to be like, well, let's get a contractor in here to talk about saving
all the water in the walls.
Because there's a lot of, there's a lot of water.
I don't think the parents ever know. Because he goes in to take
a
bath.
It's like dripping on them. It's dripping on everybody.
But then like Jonathan and Judy run up there and they're like, we'll help Paddington.
I would assume that the parents learn about it, though.
Yes,
I don't know.
That's believable. They also would maybe
go ahead.
They would also maybe find out about the fact that Paddington drew South America in shaving cream on the floor.
Yeah,
which is what distracted him from the bathtub filling up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was in the bathtub and it was too much water and he was bailing it out with his hat, but his hat has holes in it, so the water kept staying in the bathtub. And then he didn't know about the bathtubs having stoppers, which is what caused the problem.
Yeah, he could have just taken the stopper off.
Yeah. It's funny. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, but there is no... in some books like this, you would get a, we have to keep the magical animal secret for mom and dad thing. And that's never a component of Paddington,
but
including during the bathtub episode.
Interesting you say that, though, that this is the chapter where we get it. It directly addresses one of my first questions whenever there's like a talking animal or something. Uh-huh. It was part of my thoughts during Trumpet of the Swan when Paddington is a bear who could speak English.
Yeah.
Why? He's a little person, but he's a bear and he has culture. Like, I think we need to alert the scientific community about Paddington because bears have culture that we did not know about. And
yeah, sure.
And there's a conversation about this while he's messing around in the tub. You can't turn him out now. It wouldn't be right, Mrs. Brown says. Mr. Brown sighed. He knew when he was beaten. It wasn't that he didn't like the idea of keeping Paddington. Secretly, he was just as keen as anyone, but as head of the Brown household, he felt he ought to consider the matter from every angle. I'm sure we ought to report the matter to someone first, he said. I don't see why, Dad, cried Jonathan. Besides, he might get arrested for being a stowaway if we do that. Mrs. Brown put down her knitting. Jonathan's right, Henry. We can't let that happen. We can't tell the immigration police about this bear. He has every right to be here. Borders are fake. Let this bear live in England, okay? But I do like that as a, like, well, I guess we're just, but we're not going to hide him.
Yeah, it's not, no, he's not going to, like, live in the attic or whatever.
But they're also not, like, pretending he's a human child either. They're just like, he's a bear. We're going to take him to the store and buy him a coat.
Yeah, the man in the yellow hat has some stuff going on with George.
Does he pretend that George is a child?
He doesn't. It's never, like, outwardly stated, but he does treat him like a human child.
Okay.
But man in the yellow hat's got, like, he's got, like, no visible means of income. In a way that makes me think he's either like a trust fund baby or he secretly sells drugs to people out of his hat. I don't know. Like he's got the hallmarks of a fail son is all I'm saying.
Ah, I see. Sure.
And he and his monkey live in the city and also have a house in the country, but he doesn't have like a job. He just like gives presentations and stuff. He has friends at the museum. He's just, I don't know what he does.
Okay. Sure. To your
He's got a lot of free time. I'm just confused about it.
To your point about how this second chapter like doesn't end with, you know, hiding Paddington, hiding his missteps, or you know, any even like a moral about what to do in the bathtub. It ends with them being like, "Hey, you're clean now. Why don't you tell us your whole story about how you got here?" And he's just asleep instead.
Yeah.
Convenient. What did you think about the shopping trip, the trip on the tube and the purchasing clothes for Paddington, Andrew?
This is fine. I think on the train he has a ticket and he's like, man, this ticket doesn't seem like it's worth pence or whatever it is.
He struggles to understand why he has to pay for anything, which real.
Yeah. But he like tries to go up the down escalator and cause a lot of trouble, which, man, you got it. Like, just stay at the bottom and wait for your family to come back and get you. But he, like, stops the escalator and everybody's yelling at him for making them late.
Yep.
It's fine. It's like some of these, I can't turn the adult part of my brain off and get, like, I just get too stressed out by what if I was in this situation? Either as Paddington or as somebody who's being inconvenienced by Paddington.
Sure.
The train one gave me those vibes. Yeah, the shopping one was fine.
Yeah, the shopping one is fine, I think.
Mostly because it's like quaint to think of a store doing a window display that could be ruined by a bear in this day and age.
A window display or like a family coming in and there being like multiple Mr. Beans from Love Actually having to like wait on you while you're like picking out a hat for your Peruvian bear.
Yeah.
And they all have to deal with his hard stares as he decides that you are troublesome to him.
Yeah, Paddington just going all up and down England, giving everybody that Larry David stare.
Yes. He has like, there's one paragraph that says like he has like multiple expressions that he uses.
Yeah.
That some of which he keeps for emergencies. but one of them is this patented, like, are you serious stare that he levies at people. Mm-hmm. We talked about what happens in the store. And then the book for me was just kind of like, all right, now some wacky stuff is going to happen. He's going to mess up a painting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does mess up a painting, but then this is also very curious, George. Messes up a painting, but then wins the prize for best painting.
Yes.
Because he's talking to his
Mr.
friend,
Gruber.
Mr. Gruber. And Mr. Gruber's telling him about the real phenomenon where famous artists would occasionally use, like when they were out of canvases, they would paint over something that was already a painting. And sometimes the painting that's underneath would be really valuable because it was like a better painting or was by somebody more famous than you or whatever. And so he's in the process of slowly and correctly, as an archivist would, peeling the paint off of one of these, and he makes the mistake of showing it to Paddington. So Paddington just takes the first painting that he sees at home and like puts acetone all over it and tries to, and first he ruins it and he's like, oh no, I ruined it and there's no paint under here. And then he tries to paint it back again, but he does that, what that lady did to that.
Yes.
The painting of Jesus in that church.
Very much so. Yes, exactly.
And he just
That's
makes
he
a
does.
Bunch of like colorful shapes and people mm-hmm. are like, oh, this is very abstract. I love the colors. You win first prize. Here's £10 at the art.
Well, yeah.
At the art contest.
He does all of that. And then they're like having dinner and Mr. Brown says, ah, yes, the man came by to take my painting to the art contest. And Paddington can't bear to eat any food anymore.
Upper and middle class feels like undershooting for these people, I feel like. But I guess I don't know, like, relative to
that's why I'd say that, because I don't think that they are, like, landed gentry. They're living in a, you know, a house
what's
in
Mr.
London.
What's Mr. Brown's job, though?
I don't.
Does he have a job?
I don't know what his job is.
Okay, there you go.
Good point.
You don't know what his job is, and they have a live-in maid, so.
Fair enough. And yes, he wins the prize because it's so creative.
What is it with all of these independently wealthy caretakers of weird people animals in all of this children's fiction?
Well, because I think you've identified, like, it begs a question of, like, how could they have the time and the resources to care for this animal
mm-hmm.
and give it a human life? Mm-hmm. And the only explanation is that they are, you know, they come from money of some kind.
Yeah, like you never see one of these stories. And maybe you do. I would love to be clued into it if there is a version of this that exists. But you never see somebody who's like working two jobs to afford their one bedroom apartment. And like a talking cat comes into their lives and they're just like, man, I don't have time for whatever this is. I just can't do this.
I feel like whatever version of this that I'm forgetting and don't have to hand is like a more adult, almost kind of like jokey version. I can't think of a Paddington equivalent of that, where it is kind of a family down on their luck and there happens to be a talking animal.
Yeah, I've got to imagine there's some kind of parody version that exists somewhere in fiction where the family is just like, this bear is ruining our lives.
Yes.
And he kind of has them under his thumb and they can't get away. And they look at the shopkeepers who are looking at Paddington with like a quiet desperation. That's like, please, you got to save us from this bear.
Take him. I enjoyed chapter six. I thought chapter six, Paddington goes to the theater, was pretty fun.
That was fun. Chapter five, I like just to mark the transition between the first and the second half, as you've alluded to a couple times. Paddington soon settled down and became one of the family. In fact, in no time at all, it was difficult to imagine what life had been like without him. He made himself useful about the house, and the days passed quickly. And then Mrs. Bird is speaking. That bear gets more for his 10 pence than anyone I know. I don't know how he gets away with it. Really, I don't. It must be the mean streak in him. I'm not mean, said Paddington indignantly. I'm just careful, that's all. Whatever it is, replied Mrs. Bird, you're worth your weight in gold. And so that's off that
it's a weird
misunderstanding.
It's a weird logic where, yeah, it's the money misunderstanding, and then one of them says things aren't always what they seem, and then mm-hmm. we stumble into what if you ruined a painting, Paddington.
But you do get the idea that Paddington, like, maybe, you know, he is a stranger in a strange land, he's running into these things and not understanding them initially, but he is capable of getting his feet under him, and it's not, he's not a complete drain on this family's time and patience and resources.
No, no.
Because he could go to, he could go to the market and haggle with all the people there.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, whoa, a bear. And so they'll just like give him the best deals because of novelty.
Yeah.
It's pretty smart. It's pretty smart.
And there's a couple of beats in the later stories that remark, it's the one in the seaside adventure where he like, some guy wants to take his picture. It goes poorly because Paddington Amelia Bedelia is whether or not there's a birdie to look at. And then another photographer is like, great job ferreting out that guy who doesn't have a beach photography license. Why don't I give you a photo for free? And then like mm-hmm. one of the family members is like, Paddington's always just, you know, stumbling into it, isn't he? He always works out for Paddington. But yeah, I like the one where Paddington goes to the theater. He had heard about theater from Mr. Gruber and thought it was interesting. He doesn't like that you have to pay for all the stuff at a theater, which I get it.
It is. It's yeah. He's kind of complaining about the equivalent of like movie theater prices. Like I, and it's not about like, oh, I got paid too much for the junior mints. It is like, I got paid too much for the little binoculars that I have to use to see the people on the stage from my bad seats.
But, yes.
Or my box. I guess they have a box, but it's still pretty far away from the stage.
Well, and it's like, and they're a rental and the program isn't free. You have to pay for it. And you know,
you mean
the
like
coffee.
The playbill?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it, there's a,
That's where they get you, Paddington.
I don't remember this from my trip to London. I've only been once there. I feel like there was a fancy program for one play that I may have had to pay for. That was a bit more like a little magazine.
Oh, sure.
Kind of like when you like you don't get a program at a ball game, really. You have to like pay for it. That like tells you who the players are, and there's always a man yelling, "Gotta know who the players are." You're like, pay money for it.
I mean, I would probably, if it were me, I would simply look at the 400-inch TV screen on the opposite end of the stadium to find out where the they're running interviews with the players, where they talk about their favorite Marvel characters or whatever. If I needed to know what the who the players were, but I guess I could pay for a magazine too.
And I don't know if they have the fully ad-supported Playbill model in London at this time, but anyway. He drops some sandwiches on people from a balcony, like you do, because he always has marmalade sandwiches with him. Like you do.
They would just get, they would get so wet.
They really would, from just from your ambient and body heat.
Well, he's not put. It's, he's not doing the peanut butter trick, because I don't know if they have peanut butter in Britain in 1958. It's,
do you mean
that,
like, that would keep the marmalade in the sandwich?
No, like you do when you make a PBJ for your kid and you want it to last, you put a little peanut, a little layer, protective layer of peanut butter on each side of the bread and then the jelly in the middle, so the jelly can make the bread soggy.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know that he has a vapor barrier for his for his marmalade in these sandwiches. Yeah.
The thing I like this. Okay, this is just a silly story about a bear who's never seen live theater before, who sees a man having a bad time as the lead actor in a play because he doesn't know his lines and there's no prompt boy.
What's the guy's name? It's a pretty good name.
Oh, what is his name?
I'll look it up while you tell the thing.
And Paddington, after he gets over the fact that he has to pay for things, because he does get an allowance, so he's annoyed.
£1 a week, the same as the other kids. Somebody says at one point. Sir Seeley Bloom.
He's having a rough time out there as the, like, not a villain. I guess it's kind of a bad dad who's maybe going to be reformed by the end of the play. I can't remember. And by the time that Paddington gets over all his hangups about the money, he is engrossed in the play and does not like Mr. Bloom's character because he's being mean to his daughter. So during intermission, Paddington goes backstage to complain.
Yeah. This is the part where he's an old man.
Yeah. But an old man who had never heard of theater before, because he thinks these people are real. And so he's going to go back there and yell at this guy to be nicer to his daughter.
Yeah.
And, you know, hijinks ensue where he talks to these strangers and they have to ferret out that he does not understand what theater is. And once they figure that out, they reward him by making him the prompt boy. So they put him in a little box. And then, the you know, Mr. Bloom has a good show for the second act. But then Paddington gets stuck in the box and they have to put butter all over him to get him out. And that's like, it's actually kind of yada yada a little bit. It's not a very, it's not like a big hijinks paragraph. It's just like, yeah, he was in the box and then everybody left and he was still stuck in the box.
Yeah, again, that's very much it. I'd mentioned Winnie the Pooh to talk about the style, but I do keep coming back to Curious George when I'm talking about the actions, because it's a lot of hijinks ensue, but also like, you accidentally did the right thing by ruining everything, George/ Paddington. Congratulations.
Very
much
so.
Yeah. One of these days we're going to do Curious George, because the very early ones by the original people are about how it's like bad to be curious and you shouldn't do it.
I think maybe we should like do a mix for that.
And like
episode.
Those, yeah. And like, those are the ones where George like gets into ether and like passes out on the floor because he shouldn't have smelled
I
that.
I read
ether.
That book to your son on his birthday and I thought I was going to get arrested. That was so weird.
But then the later ones are all like, yeah, you made that like skyscraper collapse, but it looks like a cool like Frank Gehry thing now, so it's fine, George, good job. Like, there's a rich guy who lives in their town who just wants everything to be unique
because
he's like the richest guy and he wants to own the like the most unique version of everything, and yeah. George usually helps him do that by destroying stuff.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. But then he's made something even more unique, like creation through destruction is the story of Curious George. What? Cried Paddington in a loud voice. Several calls of hush came from the darkened theater as Sir Seeley Bloom paused and looked pointedly in the direction of the Brown's box. Do you mean to say? Words failed Paddington for the moment. 20 pence, he said bitterly. That's 2 buns worth.
I love Paddington.
Can so relate to reacting to something overpriced by comparing it to a thing that you want to buy. Like, this is, you know, this is X number of packs of Pokemon cards.
This is or X whatever. Sandwiches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chapter 7, they go to the beach. Everyone's excited to take Paddington to the beach. I told a story about how he gets confused with a photographer. All the kids participate in a sandcastle contest. Paddington falls asleep in the sandcastle, gets washed out to sea.
Yeah, right.
Really harrowing, actually, if you think about that one too much.
And he's just like missing for a while, but then they find him, and like some people get it into their heads that he like crossed the entire Atlantic Ocean in a bucket by himself.
Paddington gets it into his head. Like, he thinks he's been out there for days.
Oh, jeez.
And then Mr. Brown is like, no, it's still Tuesday or whatever. And you're right, they're going to the beach on a Tuesday, so what do any of them do for a living?
Yeah, get a job, Mr. Brown.
Okay. I guess it is like summer vacation or I don't know. And then chapter 8, Paddington does magic on his birthday. And this is the bit that you talked about where everyone is just trying to keep Paddington away from ruining the birthday.
Yeah, and then he has like a mean neighbor character who we've never
Curry.
Heard of before.
Yes.
Yeah, who Tim Curry, who comes over. And usually he seems like he hates Paddington, but he's kind of into this party. But then Paddington is doing magic and he asks for a watch.
Yep.
Because the trick is that the watch gets destroyed and then you bring out a fixed watch and it's fine. But Paddington didn't read the manual all the way through.
Nope.
And he didn't know that you're supposed to have 2 watches because the first watch really does get destroyed. And so he destroys Mr. Curry's watch. But Mr. Curry is lying about where and when he got the watch, so the property destruction is fine. And he just kind of leaves in a huff.
Yes, he's like, oh no, I've had that watch forever. And Mr. Gruber says, I sold you that watch last year. It cost nothing. So it's fine now. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
The final beat I did like, that is just a way to close out the book. Because they talk about like him, you know, maybe writing some letters to his aunt. I wish, said Paddington, as he stood at the door, waving everyone goodbye, I wish my Aunt Lucy could see me now. She'd feel very pleased. You'll have to write and tell her all about it, Paddington, said Mrs. Brown as she took his paw. But in the morning, she added. You've got clean sheets, remember? Yes, said Paddington. In the morning. I expect if I did it now, I'd get ink over the sheets or something. Things are always happening to me.
Things Are Always Happening to Me is a great summary of Paddington.
And then she says, "You know, Henry," said Mrs. Brown as they watch Paddington go up the stairs to bed, looking rather sticky and more than a little sleepy. "It's nice having a bear about the house." So, yeah. What this book...
That's the way that it's the most like having a toddler, is it's just like a constant battle to keep him from being sticky and then him transferring the stickiness from himself to other objects.
To other objects, yeah. This book does not have... I wonder if the movies have this. But like, early on, maybe you get a hint that Mr. Brown might not be on board, but he's still on board. And I feel like there could be a... If you wanted to make this into a like a dramatic arc, you would have a member of the family be resistant to Paddington's
charms. You have a like a Mr. Banks.
Yes, character. It feels like a Mr. Banks scenario. Yes.
From Mary Poppins. Yeah. For those of you who don't instantly know who Mr. Banks is for some reason,
and that is just not present here. It is not what Bond set out to write. He wrote 8 stories that just told adventures of this bear. To me, the takeaways are like, there's always hijinks. I like that he is doing kid things so that like the, if a kid is reading the story or being read to, like they can both identify with Paddington, but also, maybe feel a little superior because they know the rules of society.
Yeah, and, like, they know like, I'm not going to get everything all sticky.
Or they can be like, well, remember that time you did make everything all sticky? What did we do about it? And that it is like, I was struck by how the family was kind of just there to facilitate things happening to Paddington, as opposed to being more like, they didn't get like a full character treatment. None of them did.
No, I mean the book's not called People Called the Browns. It's called A Bear Called Paddington.
Fair point. You're right. You got me dead to rights on that one.
Yeah,
I will not argue. Anything else strike you about Paddington or things you liked or didn't like?
No, I think I've said what I have to say. I think overall I was probably a little more charmed by Pooh. I think Milne had like there's a little more wordplay in it.
Sure. Yeah.
In a way that I just enjoyed the cleverness of it.
Yeah,
more where this is all very like whimsical and fun and whatever, but the prose itself is pretty straightforward most of the time.
Yes, I agree with that, and I think the cleverness of Pooh also bumps up against some of the, are all these characters secretly old people that like Peanuts has, where you like you find yourself really like being both charmed and kind of moved by the little like, insights from these characters, and there is not that is not quite what Paddington is about at this stage in his career. It is not really about like sneaking moments of like unearthing the human condition. It is more about a bear who made a mess.
Yeah.
So, but that's Paddington. I had a good read. I had a fun time hanging out with him. I would invite him over, but I would need to like, batten everything down.
You would need to put a lot of stuff away.
Yeah.
It's like, Paddington, here's an Uncrustable. Like, can you, maybe this is sealed enough that you can't make it sticky.
We took Simon to a play date a few days ago, and the parents of his friend from daycare remarked on their son just finding things in their house that he had never messed with before.
Yeah.
Because there was a guest over.
Yeah.
And so suddenly now he's routing around in the cabinet that has all the like the internet machine, like the router and the modem and stuff in it. And he never goes in there normally, but he had to show Simon. So
yeah, well, that's important.
Paddington never comes over. I'm hiding all the internet stuff. I don't want him going on the internet.
No, I would never let Paddington on the internet.
Oh my God.
He would get so many viruses on my computer.
He's just trying to like order more marmalade.
And he accidentally like gives Bitcoin to like state sponsored North Korean hackers or something.
Oh Paddington. If you are online,
Paddington gets fished.
What is that one book you mentioned was called Paddington at Large?
Yes.
What do we think happens there?
I don't know.
Does he go missing or?
It's, I mean, it's 1962. I do wonder if like, yeah, maybe he goes missing or maybe it's like, I don't know. Maybe it's like a Jim Davis sort of thing where it's just like Paddington's fat in this one.
Well, that
because, you know, if Jim Davis ever called, I am actually positive that Garfield at Large like has to be the name of one of the. Yeah, that's his first book, Garfield at Large. It's just that he's a large cat. So maybe it's that.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe too much marmalade.
Too much marmalade.
If you are online, unlike Paddington, and you want to send us an email, send us one, overduepod@gmail.com. Find us on some of the remaining social media sites at OverduePod on Blue Sky and Instagram. See if the other ones work. Who knows? Thanks to Nick Larangis, who composed our theme music. Andrew, if folks want to know more about the show, where do they go?
OverduePodcast.com is our internet website. We've got the books that we're going to read for this month up. May's schedule should be up there pretty soon. I think we read that in last week's episode. We also have links to all the social stuff, links you can use to subscribe to the show, and a Patreon link, patreon.com/overduepod is that URL. Support us financially, buy the show equipment, buy the show books, help pay for our children's schooling and daycare.
Mm-hmm.
Just the things we need to keep the show running smoothly. All that money does that.
If a charming British bear wrecks my bathroom, the show is paying for
the
it.
Show is going to help pay for it. Yeah, exactly. Next week, I'm going to read iRobot by Isaac Asimov.
You Robot?
Yeah, me Robot.
Okay. I feel like there's three laws. That's what I know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe there are more.
Yeah.
Tune in to find out.
We'll see. Can't wait. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to us talk about Paddington. And until we talk to you next week, please try to be happy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.